Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio in real time via ZipWhip landline texting at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Rappahannock River, our focus this morning. We welcome back old friends Woody Walker and Brian Hoffman with Friends of the Rappahannock. Good morning, guys. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Ted. Glad to be here.
We set this up a month, 6 weeks ago, and you didn't tell me why or anything. You just said, you're going to want us to come in on the 12th. And so here you are, and I saw the story yesterday and assumed, I thought this is what you were talking about. I had no idea, but I knew that you guys never lead me astray. And sure enough, big story came out yesterday. Rappahannock River, number 5 on the most endangered rivers list. And my first thought when you look at it is, we talk about this stuff all the time, but you get a list like that and you see the Rappahannock River at number 5, really an eye-opener.
Yeah. So American Rivers is a national environmental nonprofit partner of ours, and they release this list of their 10 most endangered rivers every year, I think going back to 1984. And it's not a list of the most polluted rivers or the most degraded rivers. Most of these rivers are fairly pristine and beautiful and provide lots of opportunities to folks, but they make this list because of a threat or a new policy that might pass that would remove that or endanger that status of it being so so pristine or beautiful.
And in this case, fracking is the danger, I guess, that they're looking at.
Yeah, so about 4 years ago, Friends of the Rappahannock, Southern Environmental Law Center, Virginia Conservation Network, League of Conservation Voters, and a number of other partners all started getting together because we kept seeing new properties in the Northern Neck and Middle Peninsula being leased by an oil and gas company for fracking. And this was very new to us. We were getting to know that there was a shale formation underneath the Rappahannock River and Potomac Rivers down there, known as the Taylorsville Basin. And wow, how are we going to respond to this? What would the impacts be? How soon is it coming? What are the regulations or protections? Are there any? And we started answering those questions and offering up mini fracking 101 workshops to members of the public, local municipalities, board of supervisors, etc. And here we are today. We've had some successes. We have new regulations in place, but it seems as though every time we take a step forward, something happens and someone, whether it's the oil and gas industry or the General Assembly, comes in and tries to take two steps backwards.
Yeah.
And we see that as a real potential threat to keeping the Rappahannock wild, scenic, gorgeous, providing clean water for the seafood industry and all the recreational opportunities that we love to enjoy.
And we talk about those recreational opportunities. I saw the story yesterday, and as I read it, I thought of things like we like to recreationally use the river. We have events like Rock the River every year, and you love to enjoy the river. But there are some real serious threats and some real serious issues that you can't ignore anymore.
Yeah, so there currently aren't any active fracking wells. I don't believe they've even applied for a permit to frack, but just the fact that there's nothing stopping them, and there's no federal regulations in place where there are for almost every other industrial activity. It's commonplace. If you want to put a recycling plant in or a landfill or a car manufacturing plant, you're going to have to follow this wide range of environmental regulations set forth by the federal government, most likely the state and local governments as well. And this is an industry that has loopholes built into a number of the most important environmental regulations. And we want to make sure that if and when this happens, that the right protections are there.
Yeah.
Because they are using 400 unknown chemicals and injecting that into a deep well, causing explosions to occur to shatter shale formations, and then bringing only portions of that cocktail of chemicals and water back up with natural gas through an aquifer our groundwater table, and up to a pad. So a lot just got said there. You know, lots of unknown chemicals, lots and lots of water, high pressure going through pipes, thousands of feet underground, quote-unquote controlled explosions happening underground. There are risks associated with that. And, you know, if everything happened perfectly, you know, the chemicals didn't leach out of the pipes didn't rupture, the groundwater didn't get contaminated. Once everything was back up, it didn't rain with the residue of those chemicals on a concrete pad. They did have proper stormwater controls in place and runoff controls, and it was sited in a place that was, you know, suitable. We might have a viable opportunity here, but without the guiding regulations to make sure all those things happen, you know, not only is the water quality potentially at risk if fracking ever happens, but it's the rural character of these communities and their infrastructure. Hundreds or thousands of new dump trucks coming in on these tiny country roads every single day. What's that going to do to bus stops and, you know, school traffic and things like that, and the quality and health of the roads long term? Those are some real concerns.
And we've seen, it just takes one accident, just one of those things that you went down to that list of, if everything goes okay, just takes one thing to just, you know, tip over the apple cart and really change the rural character and the pristineness.
So for me, I think it's important that we're not the first place for fracking. We can learn from the experiences that other places have had. And so, you know, we know about people that have experienced this in their communities in Pennsylvania or in West Virginia, Colorado, Oklahoma. We've talked to some of these people and had them come out here and talk to people. And it's important to find out what these communities went through. What were the negative sides to this issue? How did it affect their, you know, their daily life? And learn from that. And so that's the importance of trying to get out what we've been doing for the last few years of meeting with Lions Clubs and Raritan Clubs and Boards of Supervisors, anywhere we can have what we call a fracking 101 discussion and talk about these very basic, very real concerns, what can happen. And so part of that thing I think that we're most pleased with is places like King George County, they're making a difference. They're trying to be proactive.
And we're just getting to the point. We've started this with local meetings with community groups, moved into working with planning commissions, educating planning commissions and boards of supervisors, anyone interested, offering up information, working with our partners to gather more information and make that available. And, you know, having local land use codes be the guiding force allows individual counties and communities to make these decisions on how they want to protect their resources and what resources they're interested in protecting. So Woody mentioned King George County. Last fall, they decided to, you know, essentially draw a buffer around resources that they were most concerned with in their county.
Yeah.
Streams, wetlands, private and public drinking water wells, roads, structures. And they put a 750-foot buffer around those and said, these are our sensitive areas that we feel are not suitable for this type of industrial activity. That's a pure local land use zoning decision. What that did was it left about 9% of the county where this type of industrial activity would be permissible under new planning and zoning code. And similarly, right now, Westmoreland County is considering taking that methodology, but they're considering a 1,000-foot buffer, which, again, is completely within the rights and jurisdiction and calling for these local county boards of supervisors and planning commissions exercising their local land use authority to regulate how land is used where in their county. And, you know, these things are saying, if you're going to do it here, you know, you can't have your lights on 24 hours a day. You can only have large vehicular traffic during these hours.
Yeah.
you know, your pads can be this size, these types of things. and it's not banning. It's not saying, no, you can't do the industrial activity. You can't do fracking. You can't do oil and gas exploration. It's like, in our county, this is our vision. And if you can't make your industry fit within our vision, you know, then that's your decision. But here's where you can do it and here's how. if and when that meets your needs, let's talk.
We are talking about this list that came out yesterday, Rappahannock River number 5 on the most endangered rivers list. We will continue on this morning. Woody Walker here, Brian Hoffman with Friends of the Rappahannock, riverfriends.org, the website to find out more. You go to the website this morning and it pops right up, a picture, and you can get all kinds of information about this list that came out and just the worrisome nature of it, that Rappahannock is number 5 on it. We'll continue on this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Shule.
Rappahannock River, our focus this morning with Brian Hoffman, Woody Walker with Friends of the Rappahannock here. Riverfriends.org, they're a website also. They'll keep you up to date with everything that's going on, whether it's events or important issues like we're talking about this morning, on their Facebook page also. Rappahannock River, number 5 on the most endangered rivers list. Land in 5 counties are leased for fracking, and that has helped put the river on that list. Brian, it was the governor and approved some pretty strong regulations and directed some state agencies fairly recently, didn't he, in relation to some of this stuff?
Yeah, in fall of 2016, the governor's office approved regulations at the Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energy, really putting some strong state regulations. So anytime anyone requested a permit from Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energy for hydraulic fracturing, they needed to meet certain criteria. And our partners on this report and on a great many other things, Southern Environmental Law Center, they led the fight with some other partners on getting those regulations in place. And they require, if you want a permit, you have to go out and do water quality testing before and after you do this industrial activity. So you got to go out and prove that the water's clean before you start. And when you're all done, go prove that it's still clean.
Okay.
And if it's not, you now have the basis for, you got to go back in and clean it up. Another thing, which is fairly a large precedent set, is that you have to make available to the Department of Mines, Mineral, and Energy what's in the cocktail of chemicals that you're putting into the ground to help fracture the shale and access the natural gas. A lot of companies feel that that's proprietary information, that their cocktail of chemicals does a better job than somebody else's, and therefore it should remain private. Well, this regulation doesn't issue a statement to the world about what their chemical composition is. The engineers and scientists at the Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energies get that list. And if a county that this might be happening in wants that information to prepare their first responders, firefighters, stormwater inspectors, just so they know what's on site, they could have submitted a Freedom of Information Act request for that. So those were the regulations that were passed, and that's great. It was a huge success. We were all extremely excited and proud to be the state that's passed such great regulations. But I'll tell you what, day one, maybe day three, in the General Assembly this year, not one, but 4 different bills trying to go back in and gut that new regulation were introduced and gained a little bit of ground.
So then I guess you had to mobilize people all over again.
So we did, but we're really lucky. This community and the people that make up Friends of the Rappahannock, they respond.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, the first time I saw it was when we premiered the movie Rappahannock that Bailey Sillick and Ed Santner did. You know, that was standing room only. 1,300 people showed up.
And what a great movie that is.
It's right. Well, you know, you throw a party, you never know if anybody's going to come.
Yeah.
And they all did for that movie. Well, just like with this issue, when Brian came back from the General Assembly and told us about these bills and that we needed to mobilize the troops here, we started sending out e-blasts, and we were asking people to contact their legislators. And they responded so well. Brian would come back from Richmond and say, you know, they know who Friends of the Rappahannock, you know, they know who we are.
Yeah.
Because they were getting the calls. And ultimately, it worked. And we were able to, you know, Brian was able to come back and give us the good news that these things did not get passed.
Well, and I guess you hope that something like this is a wake-up call to people, that you hear about fracking, and a lot of times somebody here might think, that's King George or Westmoreland. That's not around here. That's the Northern Neck.
So for me, I was working in West Virginia before coming to Fredericksburg. And while I was there for 2 years, it was a big deal. There were plans brought forth to allow fracking in Pocahontas County, where I was. But they have karst geology there, and it's like a sponge. And they had a big open pores in the rocks. So it was a big concern about fracking. There were issues in other counties of West Virginia and a lot of scary stories coming out of Pennsylvania. But when I came to work here, you knew John Tippett, our former executive director. Yep. John and I sat down, and when he told me there was a fracking concern for Tidewater, Virginia, I was stunned, because we don't know that. And that's what's important about these conversations, to let people know, make sure they're in and they are aware. Because that's a big surprise for a lot of people, Ted. People are really surprised that there's fracking concerns here.
Yeah.
And in this report, you know, Woody and I have both had great experiences with this report in the past. It's just a new tool in our toolbox as an individual, as someone who's, you know, been involved with environmental issues for quite some time. But it's a great tool to have. And now we have this resource to put in the hands of our members, of residents and community groups. You know, they have access to this information. They have access to, you know, Friends of the Rappahannock and our partners at American Rivers and Southern Environmental Law Center. And I just want to say, going back to the General Assembly, we are very fortunate. I show up at the General Assembly, and I've got lead lobbyists from Virginia Conservation Network there saying, Brian, you're going to hit this meeting, this meeting, this meeting. Here's the meeting rooms and times. And then Virginia League of Conservation Voters is leading another group, because we come from all over the state,
yeah,
representing our small, you know, portions of the state. And these, we just show up and our team leaders are there directing. And I know Woody was just up in Washington, D.C. With some of our team last week and showed up. And, you know, again, I'm here. And then out of nowhere comes the team lead, ready to go. It's a well-oiled machine. We're very fortunate to have great partnerships throughout the state. But now that we have this report, you know, it is going to be such a great resource, informational resource, and people who don't write up their own talking points or their own letters, you know, you can just go to your board of supervisor and say, I just got this report. I think that you need to pay more attention to this. Done. Email the report to your delegate.
Yeah.
Done. go to one of these public meetings. And if you're not someone who can articulate an issue right off the bat, you sit there and read the first paragraph. And the Rappahannock's number 5, because of fracking. I'm concerned. Thank you. I live at say your address, and you're good to go.
Yeah. Well, you hope that the people do realize, and it's, nothing has happened yet, and so you can still play a part and in a role in formulating policy in all these localities.
So I think that's true, because we haven't got any active wells, but we do have more than 80,000 acres leased.
Mm-hmm. So, which is a concern.
Right. So things have happened on that front. And it's something that, you know, once these things happen, and people out there, you know, in these counties where this is happening, not everybody has the same deal. Not everybody gets the same information. And so it's important that people, you know, they share this stuff. They learn about what these leases mean and what can happen. And that's a big part of what Brian and Richard Moncure, our river steward out of Tappahannock.
Yeah.
Richard has been working on fracking for years, making sure people understood. What, you know, what do they need to know to protect themselves? And that's been our angle. And now we have this tool to keep that conversation alive.
Well, and one of the things we always talk about whenever there's, you tend to look at the river as if, you know, I'm looking at the river from Fredericksburg, but it's things that happen on both, you know, along the river that eventually can impact us. So while fracking might not be a problem or something that Fredericksburg or Spotsylvania or Stafford are looking at, it's along the river, and you've got to be concerned about it. Just like when it rains, it might not rain here, but if it's rained a lot in Culpeper, we end up getting we feel the effects later on.
Absolutely, and we're in a really unique place on the river right here in Fredericksburg, where we get all the water flowing through Fredericksburg from the upper headwaters from Culpeper, Warrenton, Rappahannock County, but we also get the tide that comes in.
Right.
So we got water coming from both ways and running off the land in. So four ways. So we get it from all angles here. And I mean, we'd be remiss to think that if something happens in Port Royal, that it's not going to get up into Stafford County and Spotsylvania County on the river there.
Yeah.
Caroline County. So, we do have quite a bit to prepare for, and that's what we're trying to do, work with the local communities to just be prepared and well-informed.
Now, I can remember 4 or 5 years ago, John Tippett coming in here and us doing shows on fracking, and at that time it was there still was a lot of study being done, and you started way back, had a vision for this to at least inform the public, and you guys have done that.
And I think that it's important to note that it's been those years, 4 or 5 years now,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of data that says there are concerns. Nothing has been, you know, there's nothing has come out that said, oh, don't worry about this, if, you know. There are valid reasons to be concerned, and that's why we keep this conversation alive.
We're going to take a break, come back. We're going to wrap up this part of the conversation and then also talk about some things that are going on the river and things that you want to be involved in over the next couple of months. Woody Walker here, Brian Hoffman with Friends of the Rappahannock, riverfriends.org, their website. Also check them out on Facebook. We will continue on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:30.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Friends of the Rappahannock, our focus. The Rappahannock River, our focus. With Friends of the Rappahannock is probably the more correct way to say it. Brian Hoffman, Woody Walker here from FOR, and we've been talking about this list that came out yesterday. Rappahannock River number 5 on the most endangered rivers list. Land in 5 counties. We have heard this morning, at least for fracking, and that has a cause for concern. Before we move on, Brian, what's next? What can people expect? You've already talked about having people talk to boards of supervisors and general assembly members and that kind of thing. Where do you go from here now with this list?
Yeah, so we're actually really fortunate. This is great timing for this list to come out, and we're so excited to be included on this. Helps bring a national spotlight to our river and the communities we have here. Westmoreland County is on the verge of considering and having a vote for local land use policies in their county to addressing fracking. So we're hoping to see something come from that county in the next couple weeks, maybe the next month.
Okay.
And you know, we do want to see local traction. Call us up and help. We'll try and work with you to organize a workshop on fracking. We definitely have the information. We can come and speak to your community group, church, your country alliance, whatever you have about this. And we're really trying to maintain the regulations we have at the state level. So we want to make sure that our state delegates and senators know that our river, our communities, our members are not going to tolerate any sort of legislation that tries to erode or backslide from the status quo we've approved in the fall. So we're going to be sending out call to actions anytime we see a bill or hear whispers of any sort of policy or legislation that might be going backwards on those regulations.
Well, I mean, one of these days we'll have to do a show, have you guys come back and bring a guest or something and do a show on fracking, because it's been a while since we've done that, and just do a show on some of the, you've talked about a lot of it today, but just do a complete show focusing on fracking. So that'll be something to we'll set up. Again, though, riverfriends.org website, and also Friends of the Rappahannock has a up-to-date and a great Facebook page on things. On to a couple of other things. Congratulations, by the way, the Community Foundation. I think you were the first. They're giving out some of these vision grants, and Friends of the Rappahannock was the first one to get it. It's a sizable amount of money, and just some good things involved with this.
Yeah, we are so fortunate to be selected for that grant. It was actually one of the best award ceremonies we've ever had. They teased us, came in and snuck in, and then a bunch of the folks from the Community Foundation came in the back door with boom boxes and a giant check and smiles. And it was a great day. But the project that we submitted to them, we've been trying to find a way to get it off the ground for multiple years now. It's going to help us fill gaps in existing water quality data for the region, Planning District 16, so Spotsylvania, Stafford, City of Fredericksburg, King George, Caroline County, on our local creeks and streams, many of which are listed as impaired by the Department of Environmental Quality. And that's going to culminate in the creation and publication of a Rappahannock River report card. And all across the country, you can find large watersheds have these report cards. It's, you know, an assessment of where we started, where we're at now, what's been accomplished, and sometimes a letter grade, just to make it easy to understand. So, you know, is the Rappahannock River in this region a C minus, a B plus? So this is going to help us determine what metrics we use to create that grading scale, which is the bulk of the work, and a lot of mapping and creating, you know, graphs, charts, and such, and finding all the different groups that have the data, whether it's Department of Environmental Quality, Fish and Game, any other number of different groups, pulling all that data together, seeing what else we need, going and getting it. That's where we have a citizen water quality monitoring program. Lots of great volunteers put in countless hours doing some pretty technical things. And we're going to work with them to gather that new data needed and really have this great resource that's going to be available to anyone who wants it on our website. Hard copies available. The Community Foundation is going to work with us to help promote this report once it's done, you know, have some public meetings, workshops, things like that. And we're really just getting this off the ground. But again, we couldn't be more excited.
Yeah, no, but what an exciting thing, especially with this whole tied into this list that just came out.
Yep.
The two of those things will give people really an understanding of where we are and what's going on with the river. And so we have good stuff. So I guess in the months ahead, we'll be having you back, and there'll be a lot more talking about this, because there's obviously a lot of community involvement with this.
Oh, certainly. And we're thrilled to have such good, great local community partners and a lot of support from even outside our local communities.
Well, congratulations on that. That's that was exciting to hear. Woody, when you were in the last time, a few months ago or so, you were talking about this oral history project is a pretty exciting thing.
It is. And through the Community Foundation, we also received some funding to continue this oral history program. This is year two. This is pretty special in that we work really closely with Mary Washington, University of Mary Washington faculty and students. So, you know, the faculty has expertise in oral history. We want to do this the right way.
Mm-hmm.
There's the right way to conduct interviews and archive those interviews so that they're available. So we work with the school. It's a great thing for their students to get to be part of. And we're excited. Tomorrow we're going to interview John Tippett, our former executive director. He's our third interview. And so we're going to talk to John about what it was like to coordinate the grassroots movement of removing the Embry Dam. And, of course, I'm sure you remember that.
Yeah.
I wasn't here then. But so it's going to be cool to talk to John and continue. This is the third interview that we've done about the dam removal so that we can put that story out there, and researchers for years and years in the future can use these interviews.
He came in here numerous times talking about that, he and others. And I remember when Senator Warner being over there at Friends of the Rappahannock a couple of times to talk about it. And there's just a lot of history and a lot of history behind a lot of things. You mentioned, I know when you were here the last time, I can't even remember now, the other oral history ones you've done have been real relevant topics.
Well, so for us, you know, in year one, we were learning how to do this. There's a right way. There's an academic, you know, scholarly way to do this program. And so we were learning about those things. And to help keep us focused, we picked the story of the Embry Dam removal.
Yeah.
We interviewed Hal Wiggins.
That's right.
Hal was with the Corps of Engineers at the time, a longtime, you know, friend of the Rappahannock. So we got his input on how the permitting, how did the Corps of Engineers, you know, work out the science behind this. We talked to Bill Mix, of course, you know. Bill is the founder of Friends of the Rappahannock, and he was there, and we got his side of the story. And so we'll wrap that up tomorrow with John Tippett. And we're looking at some other really cool ways. We've got a steering committee made up of community members, some local business owners, and some people that represent local museums and things. So they have a lot of expertise in this. So we're ready now to kind of pick out who is the next interview, and it's going to be exciting.
Now you can see not too far from where your headquarters are still some of the ruins of the Embry Dam. Always, it's always fun to walk by and see that because there's so much history. Mm-hmm. We're talking Friends of the Rappahannock this morning, riverfriends.org. Woody Walker is here. Brian Hoffman is here. It is sold out, but the Hunter's Island tour, again, takes place this coming weekend. And I guess it's a good reminder that if you'd ever like to go over there and get a tour with the owner of the island, it's just a lot of history over there. Think about it next year, and when you see that the tickets go on sale, you better get your seat because it is limited.
It is. It's really popular, and I think it's catching on, Ted. I think, you know, you were there last year with us and did some promotional stuff, and people look forward to this, whether it's people who are naturalists or history buffs. There's something for everybody when they do this, and we've got more than 30 people going Saturday. Our goal is always, if we take 30 over, you got to bring 30 back. So, you know, everybody come, no man left behind. Everybody comes home. That's my main goal for Saturday. But we're really excited. It's going to be a beautiful day.
Yeah, no, I want to do it again with you sometime, of going over and clearing trails and all. And it is just fascinating to you. You always look over and see it from this side, but a chance to get over there. So when you see that come up every year, you're going to want to sign up and sign up real quick. Brian, it was last Sunday, wasn't it? There was, because we talked about before, from the Rappahannock for the Rappahannock at Marriott Ranch. And I know that's becoming quite a big spring, a spring event for you guys.
Yeah, this was its third year having that event. Almost a 5,000 acre cattle farm right in the foothills, backdrop with the Blue Ridge Mountains. Couldn't have asked for better weather. We had about 180 people out there, planted 300 trees along Fiery Run, a nice tributary to the Rappahannock. We had hayride tours for folks. We had fly tying. We had fly fishing casting demonstrations. All kinds of information from, I can't think of the number, about seven different conservation groups were there. So it was a one-stop shop if you were interested in conservation in around Fauquier, Rappahannock, Culpeper counties. We had Department of Game and Inland Fisheries there, shocking fish and talking about the health of the aquatic ecosystems there. The John Marshall Soil and Water Conservation District. We're talking about, you know, agricultural best management practices and conservation strategies for agricultural properties, which they'd already put on the farm. So on the hayride, they'd stop, hop out and talk about this. And the farmer that had put it there or on their property somewhere else was there to say, yeah, this does work, or, well, this is my issue with it. So you're getting the best info. And then Piedmont Environmental Council was there with information about their upcoming events and the work they do, conservation easements, land protection, things like that. Department of Forestry was there to help teach everybody that was interested how to properly plant trees, look at tree identification. So we couldn't have asked for a better day, and we're really looking forward to continuing to have that event. And don't forget the Rappahannock River Oysters, the star of the whole show. And we had Deborah Pratt, world champion oyster shucker, who I think's retired, but she came out of retirement for this event. And she was just a blessing to have up there as well.
Riverfriends.org, it'll give you all the information on what's going on with Friends of the Rappahannock. You also give you information on joining Friends of the Rappahannock, because I know, Woody, you're always looking for people that this is how Friends of the Rappahannock can do what you do, because you've got people that join every year.
It's easy to say it's the backbone of our organization, but when we were talking earlier about needing help to influence people in the General Assembly, and we sent emails and e-blasts and letter requests and phone call requests to our members and supporters, and they responded like they did, that makes a difference. I like to describe or define our members. You know, they're card-carrying members of Friends of the Rappahannock. They're physical partners. They do cleanups. They come to events. So, absolutely, it's $30 for a 1-year individual membership.
And what a deal!
Everybody to be involved.
Yeah, you get discounts for some of these events, but it also it helps you, and you can go to Capitol Hill. Or Brian can be in Richmond and say, you know, he's speaking for the number of members, people who are members, and that shows everyone that, well, to be a member, you're willing to pay some money to be a member of Friends of the Rappahannock. Riverfriends.org, the website. Also check out the Facebook page. When we come back, we've got a couple more events coming up over the next couple of months that we will key you in on. Woody Walker, Brian Hoffman here. We'll be right back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Woody Walker, Brian Hoffman with Friends of the Rappahannock here this morning. A couple of events coming up that we need to do talk about before you guys get out of here. Woody, on the 22nd, Earth Day 2017, and it is featuring, I guess, is something that you guys are doing. Is it Bats of the Rappahannock?
It is. You know, we're lucky to work with Fredericksburg Parks and Rec on this event. They're our partners on a lot of things. They host Earth Day. We'll have Bats of the Rappahannock. So we're going to have examples of bats. We'll have cool presentations really geared toward young people, you know, that middle school kind of elementary school age. We're going to build some bat boxes, so attendees of Earth Day will be able to come by our booth and help drive nails and screws in and build some bat boxes that we'll put up and create some habitat for them. So very exciting.
11 to 4, it's at Old Mill Park, and like you say, that this is it's not something you see every day. Bats of the Rappahannock,
they're out there.
So check that out. Again, that's at Old Mill Park, and next Saturday, April the that's Saturday, I think.
Yes.
The 22nd. Yep. May 6th, Eagles, Beetles, and Wild Edibles.
Another good partnership that we have with folks from Mary Washington University. Joella and Michael Killian are biologists with UMW. They lead this hike, and there'll be 25-30 attendees. This is year 3 or 4. What's really neat is half of the attendees have their binoculars, and they're with Joella staring up at the top of the trees, and the other half have their field guides, and they're on their knees with Mike Killian, and he's down in the grass showing them what kind of plants you can eat and what kind of plant this is. So half the people are looking up, the other half are looking down. It's a great event.
These events, all the events that you have are very family oriented, and always something for kids, always something that adults can grab onto.
We do. We try to work for it. There are, some events like Riverfest. That's kind of an adult event, and it's meant to be that way. But most of our interpretive trips where we get people on hikes or out on the river, sometimes I have to set some age limits if it's a day-long hike and there's some white water involved. So we take, we take older kids for that. But we really work for things to be family-friendly.
Civil War Paddle's coming up on June 10th, and I know that has gotten to be really popular.
It really has. It's sold out the last few years. We go down the Rapidan River from Germanna Ford to Ely's Ford. We've got a great Park Service historian who leads this, and he's telling stories about Stonewall Jackson and Grant's, you know, Overland campaign and George Custer, it really brings it to life. He's showing you the exact places where things happened along that river. He really brings it to life.
Well, and to be on the river, it gives you a totally different perspective on things.
It does, and it's a full day. It's a long day out there on the river with this one. But we stop at lunch on a sandbar, and people are able to, you know, take a nice rest, sit in the shade. A lot of people get in the water. We make it fun. So, yeah, it's a day of paddlers, bird nerds, history buffs. Everybody likes that one.
Speaking from the river, and we were talking earlier about John Tippett, the former executive director. Years ago, when the Embry Dam, when the conversation was just starting, he took me back there, and to get back there, it's amazing how you can be around traffic and all kinds of things, and not too many steps down along the river, and all of a sudden it's completely quiet, and just it's you got to do it to experience, to really understand it.
Some of those places, just like you said, 1 minute you're in a parking lot off of Route 3 or Route 17, and then as far as you can see in either direction, old growth forest, bald eagles, ospreys, wildlife, otters, beavers, muskrats, herons, the birds are just wonderful. And you can take your paddle out of the water and it's nothing but nature. No cars,
yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And it's a magical experience. And that's because there's about 4,000 acres of conservation easement on both sides of the river going up to the confluence and then up the Rappahannock and up the Rapidan. And that's just what makes this part of the river so special.
We started off talking about this list that came out with the Rappahannock at number 5, and I think a lot of people around here would have thought, well, this was all taken care of. You mentioned the river easement a few years ago, and that was one part of it. Now you're dealing with the whole fracking thing. And Woody, during the break, you said something that was really interesting. This isn't something to get mad at, but it is something to be informed about and be able to go forward and know what you want to do.
Absolutely. I think the first response when people see this is, what is wrong with our river? Why is it, why, what's wrong is, you know, and it's not that. The question is, or the point is that it is endangered. There is an imminent threat. People need to be aware of this. They need to understand what this means for our communities. And that's what this tool is about, raising awareness.
We will talk about that in the weeks ahead. Thank you both for coming in this morning and talking about this.
Thank you so much.
This is very informative and current. Riverfriends.org to find out more and to join Friends of the Rappahannock. Woody Walker, Brian Hoffman here. That's it for Town Talk.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.